Good morning, everyone. I'm Lauren, and I'm going to be the person who's the teacher today. Good morning to everybody. So, this morning I'm going to be giving the last Sunday Sit Talk for the year on mindfulness, which is the seventh factor in the Eightfold Path. And we know the Eightfold Path leads to the end of suffering. It's been a rich and inspiring month on mindfulness, and a rich and inspiring year as well, spent with the Four Noble Truths. So that's just to give you a context, those of you who haven't been here, what we've been focusing on and where this talk comes from. So many of you have heard one or more of these talks, whether that was here at our Sunday sit or Monday night with our guiding teachers, Tim and Carrie. So when I started to think about what I would include in my talk, I thought, well, what is important and has not been covered yet? I also thought about a challenging experience I had this month, which had a lot to do with mindfulness and also a lack of mindfulness. After some thought, I came up with three main subjects of interest to me, and I thought to you too. And these were the hindrances, the seven factors of awakening, and the fourth foundation of mindfulness. So before you think, oh my gosh, that's too much, I'm not going into the details of all of these things. I'm picking out aspects of them. So, and the reason that I chose these was that I encountered all three of these subjects when I started reflecting on the difficult experience I just mentioned. It involved aversion, and I won't go into details. I'll just say that I found myself in a group with a person who triggered lots of feelings of aversion in me. So, I listened to talks and I was mindful of what was going on to the best of my ability. And I took notes, and I'm going to share a little bit about what I learned from my own direct experience, as well as what I learned from current teachers, my colleagues, and from the Buddha's teachings. Initially, I had two problems this month. I had the problem of the aversion, which I felt had caused me a lot of suffering. And also I had a problem of finding a topic for my mindfulness talk. So when I started focusing on aversion, I thought about the hindrances. And the hindrances led me to the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And the fourth foundation of mindfulness led me to the seven factors of awakening. So the hindrance I'm going to talk about is aversion. And I'm not going to talk about all five elements of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, just two, which are the hindrances. It is one of the elements in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And the factors of awakening are also part of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. And when I talk about the factors of awakening, I'm just going to talk on two, and those are mindfulness and investigation. In his book on the Noble Eightfold Path, in the section on right mindfulness, Bhikkhu Bodhi includes a discussion of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, and he says in that section, the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening require special attention because they are the principal impediments and principal aids to liberation. So there are five sets of objects in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, and two of them are the five hindrances and the factors of awakening. So, this month I felt like I had a run-in with aversion, and when I read Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, he was confirming that if I studied the hindrance of aversion and the factors of awakening, which I chose to study mindfulness and investigation, then I could investigate. I could be mindful of aversion and I could investigate it. And usually with the Buddhist teachings, you can generalize. So if you're working with one hindrance, that can help you work with other hindrances. While you listen, you may be thinking of another hindrance, maybe your current favorite. The other hindrances are sensual desire, such as craving, hunger, never being satisfied. Sloth and torpor is another hindrance, which manifests as dullness of mind, sleepiness, avoiding what's difficult. Restlessness and worry manifest as regret or anxiety. And doubt is the last, which manifests as uncertainty, indecision, lack of confidence in one's ability to practice or in the Dhamma itself. I had already learned that being mindful of the hindrance was a first skillful step. And we have to observe and note, and then we investigate. Our teacher, Rodney, emphasized curiosity and asking questions. I often hear our other teachers stress the value of curiosity, and people in the Sangha during their sharing often bring up questions they've discovered that help guide their investigation. Lucky for me, I had a folder and I found a convenient list with definitions of the five hindrances and the seven factors all on one page. I wonder where I got that, I thought, and I looked at the heading. It said January 30th, 2019, The Five Hindrances and Seven Factors of Awakening, led by Suze Appel and Anna Ossenfert. So thank you, Suze. I needed to remember all seven factors, and I saw that the first two were mindfulness investigation. The rest are energy, rapture, calm or tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And they do have a sequential of development. Each one arises naturally out of the preceding one. They're meant to be practiced in order. So by starting with a mindfulness and investigation, we're starting in the right place. I was starting in the right place. As far as the four foundations of mindfulness go, it had always felt like a mystique, that it had a mystique, and I was never sure if I had practiced with this foundation or not. I don't know if some of you might also feel that same way. It is the last one, but we do need to practice all of them. The Buddha says they are required. The mindfulness is a direct path to nibbana, to awakening, and we do need to practice with all of them. But we don't have to practice in order, so that was good. So we have the first foundation is the body, the second foundation, feeling tones, the third foundation is the mind, which includes thinking and emotions, and the fourth foundation has five sets to it, and they are the hindrances, which we're going to talk about today, specifically aversion, and the others are, where did I put the others? They're in my list that Suze, excuse me, the list that Suze made. Yeah, just to review, mindfulness, investigation, energy, rapture, calm, concentration, and equanimity. Yeah, I already mentioned those. And then those are the factors of awakening. Sorry, what's in the fourth foundation of mindfulness is the hindrances the factors of awakening, the six senses, the four foundations, the four noble truths, and what's the other one? I'll get that in a minute because I do have it here somewhere. So, if you have already been practicing with being mindful of the hindrances, you have been practicing in the fourth foundation of mindfulness. So that is something that I hadn't realized. And if you have wondered about the fourth foundation of mindfulness, it really isn't as mysterious as one might think. And then I wanted to read further to find out, okay, why would the Buddha have this fourth foundation? What's its purpose? And in all his suttas, of course, he learned all these things firsthand. Everything that he teaches us, he didn't hear from somebody else. He experienced it in his life. He tried it out, and this is what he came up with. And so what happened here with this fourth foundation? And so in Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, I looked at Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, and he calls the fourth foundation mindfulness of phenomena. And that to me is a little mysterious, you know, like, so what are phenomena? And then Philip Moffat, to me, clarified it a little better. He calls it mindfulness of the impersonal truth of life. And that seems, since the goal is to understand, find the truth, it seems like this fourth foundation helps us get closer to the truth and looks at how we, you know, what is truth. So that was helpful to me. Then Joseph Goldstein calls it mindfulness of dhammas, and he goes on to explain that in Pali, dhamma means the truth, the law, and also the teachings of the Buddha. So there seemed to be a convergence of the idea that the fourth foundation works on finding the truth and the law, the way things are. Joseph went on to say that each of the five groups that I was talking about, the hindrances, the factors of awakening, are the two groups we're looking at, that we contemplate in the fourth foundation, are organizing principles. So I was thinking, what does that mean? To me, that means that the Buddha is sharing his insights that he learned about the way each of these groups work in our experience. They are sets of that clarify the cause-effect relationships that help us see clearly for ourselves the truth of natural law. They help us unlock the truth of the way things are. For example, when we're mindful of the hindrances, we can start to see patterns and the rules whereby they function in our life. We can learn, so instead of taking them as like some separate thing to memorize or just deal with all by itself, we can start to see the rules, how they function. So we can learn healthy ways to relate to them and to abandon them. And that's what we learn when we study the hindrances. When we are mindful of the factors of awakening, we can learn how to cultivate these factors, which will lead us to awakening. And now that we're on the factors of awakening, it's interesting because they do have a sequential relationship. So that's important to know. So the Buddha, obviously, when he started studying and being mindful of what was going on in his life and started getting insights, he saw these patterns. He saw, oh, these are sequential. And that helps us to practice with them. The first one, mindfulness, arouses investigation. Investigation needs energy. Energy gives rise to rapture. Rapture leads to tranquility. Tranquility to concentration. And concentration to equanimity. So going into my experience, a hindrance like aversions, with a hindrance like aversion, one should note it. When it fades away, we're told you should know that too. This is the beginning of investigation. One starts to learn which conditions give rise to the hindrance and which conditions lead to their cessation. So part of learning the truth and is to see these relationships. So I'm going to give you an example with my own experience, which I had with aversion. So I found myself in a group with a person who I was quickly developing a strong aversion to. And the first thing I did was judge this person. So I was mindful of that. I was saying things like, in my mind, this person shouldn't be doing this. And I was thinking of ways what the person should be doing. And I'll just stop right now. I'm going to interrupt this because in the previous month, when we worked on wise effort, I had written down an aspiration for myself, and that was to develop more metta and goodwill for others in myself. That's what I wanted to develop. I think I even shared this aspiration with the Sangha. So here I was experiencing a strong aversion, which I didn't feel I had control over. And I had just set out an aspiration to be kind, develop metta, feel goodwill towards others. At the time, I didn't see the irony of that. But I did see that I wasn't being very kind in my feelings. This aspiration I had written down, and it came from Ajahn Suchito's book on the Paramis, so I'll just say it briefly because it plays out in my experience with aversion. So my aspiration was to recognize the happiness of a warm heart, to aspire to cultivate empathy and compassion, to resist mind states based on fault finding of myself and others, and to encourage goodwill rather than foster ideals of perfection. So here I was judging this person and, you know, finding all fault with what this person did. I was acting in the opposite way. And in addition to that, I was very disappointed in myself because I had just had this aspiration to do differently. So in response, when I started feeling bad about myself, my thoughts of proliferation, there were proliferating thoughts about what was wrong with this person and really just wishing the person would go away. I did have the card on my table, so I was trying to practice metta and I was trying to practice this aspiration. I was doing metta phrases and chants, but any little piece of good experience of goodwill was very fleeting. And there were also ideas how I might be able to fix the person, which I knew I shouldn't be doing. But then I started criticizing myself. I moved from the person to myself for not being friendly and not having compassion. I also criticized myself for not talking to the person and trying to work things out because I had taken a class in nonviolent communication. And I found myself comparing myself to Nelson Mandela, who made friends with his prison guards, and to the Dalai Lama, who let go of his anger towards the Chinese. So that made me think of the fostering ideals of perfection. It certainly was. That was ideals of perfection. When I meditated, I spent a lot of time in the top layer of emotion, which was, this is not pleasant. This is not peaceful. I don't like feeling this way, and you are the problem. But underneath, I finally saw that I felt vulnerable and defensive. And that's where I really needed to stay long enough to relax and observe and allow. When it came time to do this talk, I was looking at this situation in retrospect because I'm not in this situation any longer. But I realized that I had learned a lot about the hindrances and specifically aversion. And as I have been practicing with the two awakening factors, which I didn't really know were awakening factors, mindfulness and investigation, I started learning about what was at work in me in this situation and how important mindfulness and investigation are with respect to the hindrances. Philip Moffat says, impersonal truths of life, that's what the Dhammas are, and that's what the fourth foundation is about. And it's wise view to see them that way, with an emphasis for me on impersonal. I wasn't viewing my aversion in an impersonal way. I was attached to it because the worst part of my suffering was that I had aversion to my aversion. I was thinking, I'm a bad person. I'm a bad Buddhist. And in this group, the people knew I was a Buddhist and none of them were a Buddhist. And I kept thinking, oh, this is not a good example. I'm not showing what it's like to be a Buddhist because I didn't do anything. I think people were aware that I felt aversion to this person. I didn't do it, you know, blatantly, but I knew that I wasn't acting like a good Buddhist. That was in my mind. But I couldn't let go of my dislike. My real job was just to see and be aware of what was going on in me. Rodney would say, relax, observe, allow. The strong emotional reaction was an indication that I was attached and personalizing the aversion. The Satipatthana Sutta, which is the sutta with instructions on meditating on the four foundations, which includes, of course, the hindrances, those instructions don't have words like good or bad in them. The instructions say, and I'll quote here, how does he abide contemplating the Dhammas? He abides contemplating the Dhammas in terms of the five hindrances. If aversion is present in him, he knows there is aversion in him. So it's the word know, it's not the word judge. If aversion is not present in him, he knows there is no aversion. And he knows how unarisen aversion can arise and how arisen aversion can be removed and how a future arising of the removed aversion can be prevented. So we studied the four great efforts in October, and you can see there that those are descriptions of the four great efforts. And that's a translation by Analio, and it was in Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness. It's assumed that the hindrances will arise. You know, that's why it's one of the foundations of mindfulness. You're going to run into these, the Buddha is telling us, and this is the way you can work with them. It's natural for them to arise in human beings. I was listening to a meditation by Ajahn Suchito, one of our founding Western monks. And he says in this guided meditation, forms and feelings need to arise so they can pass on. One finishes and the next thing arises. Let that move through. Allow energy to unravel, to speak and finish speaking and to be heard. So I'm thinking of this energy of aversion I had. Allow the aversion to unravel, to speak and to finish speaking and to be heard. The Buddha further instructs us to pay attention to the moment of arising, if we can, so we can see what conditions may stimulate the arising of the hindrance. So here's where he's talking about the relationships in our life with the hindrances. And when we see that connection, it can help us prevent the arising again. We're asked to pay attention to when the hindrance passes away. And that can help us remember that the hindrance is impermanent. Also, it helps us understand the conditions that surround its ceasing. We can also pay attention to when a hindrance is present. Just generally, is it present right now? No. And when it's not present, the presence and the absence are equally important. As our guiding teacher, Tuari, noted in her talk on Wise Effort last month, we need to be aware of and dwell in our skillful and wholesome states, which we have a tendency to pay less attention to. So when you are working with the hindrances, also be aware of when the hindrance is not there. When I woke up the other morning, I'll tell you one more thing that in the way I was practicing. When I woke up the other morning, after a while, I was aware that I was feeling down. At the time, I didn't realize it, but the state of mind was getting stronger rather than fading away. I say this because the instructions tell us to notice the presence and the absence of the hindrance. I assumed that this applied to states of mind as well. Then I realized that I was moving in and out of mindfulness. You know, I was mindful that I was down, and then I wasn't mindful that I was down. So I decided to write down my observations and notice the timing. I could see that initially I just felt down in my outlook, but then I became down on myself for feeling down, and that made the state of mind stronger. So that's the same thing that happened to me with aversion. The second arrow. I started to think about what I could do to fix the situation about myself. And there was some proliferation of thinking on the topic, and I still felt down. I mean, I felt worse, so I wasn't going in the right direction. Then I realized I became aware of the quality of my mind and my mindfulness, and I saw this is resistance to what is happening. This is aversion again. And that's not skillful. All the mindfulness instructions point to softening, opening, allowing, receiving. That's what I'd been practicing in other situations, but in this moment I forgot. I was being now mindful of my mindfulness. The fourth foundation asks us to do that. And my mind remembered. I think this might be one of the reasons mindfulness is called sati in Pali. I drop the resistance and I turn my mind to another activity. Then I looked at my notes and I said, I'm going to see what's going on now. And within an hour, my mind state was now confident, curious, a feeling, I can do this. It's okay. I looked back at my cheat sheet from Suze's and Anna's Buddhist Essentials class on the hindrances and factors of awakening, and I hadn't seen it before, but they wrote down that the word for hindrance in Pali is Nivarana, and that means veil in English, and that struck me. No wonder the hindrances are so important. I've heard so many times of a veil or the layers that separate us from the truth and distort our perception of reality. In my own notes, I had written a quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, and he said, Dhamma, the ultimate truth of things, is always available to us. What makes it available is sati, or mindfulness. It's a process of coming back to the present with bare attention. Normally, an object is not perceived through bare attention. It is perceived through a veil, of elaboration that the mind constructs, embellishes, associates, projects. We can add hindrances to that list. And as we unravel the hindrances, we unravel the veil. In conclusion, the Satipatthana Sutta points us to practice with the four foundations of mindfulness, body, feeling tones, mind, and dhammas. We need to practice with all four, and we don't need to put them in order. Although the fourth may seem a bit mysterious, we are really already practicing with the fourth foundation when we are mindful of the hindrances in our meditation or our daily life, when we investigate their causes and conditions, and when we apply the four great efforts of preventing and abandoning to them, and when we cultivate and nurture the factors of awakening that support our movement toward nirvana rather than impeding it. Mindfulness and investigation are the first essential factors to penetrating, liberating truth. A curious, non-judgmental state of mind in the presence of those pesky hindrances is essential for wise mindfulness and precise investigation. And humor can help too. So, that is my offering today. And I thought that we could maybe have, since it's the last gathering on mindfulness, that we would have a whole group rather than a breakout group sharing, and people could maybe share what pesky hindrance they like to work with or they don't like to work with, or some insight they've had with mindfulness investigation. Anything you're investigating now? Anything you've learned during this month of investigating mindfulness? All are welcome. You can unmute yourself. Charlotte, can you unmute yourself?
Yes. I have been very sleepy this morning. I'm on a pain medication, and I made a mistake of taking it before I sat. And so it's been brutal. But what I received from you was just to continuing.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm doing, is making them. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you for your talk and your telling me it's okay. If you're falling asleep, you know the reason why, and you know not to do that the next time, to delay any medication until after we have our sip. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlotte, because that's a very good example of not personal. I mean, you know, it was that medication. It's not personal. And so many things happen that we think, you know, we want to attach ourselves to, and they're not. So it's probably, yeah, thank you, Charlotte. Liz.
That was a great talk, Lauren. That was wonderful. This week, I had the benefit, I guess, of working around some, being mindful around a disagreement with my husband, you know, real bonus there of a relationship. And it was valuable to really witness the disagreement, which, as difficult as it was, it gave me ability to work around some of the the hindrances and the mindfulness practice of really sitting with what really is. And it got me really to thinking at points about the idea of ill will and going into really the non-self or the self, how solid my self became around that ill will when I was carrying that really, oh, I'm mad, or I'm just feeling really angry towards my husband. And then I was like, well, wait, now I'm like sitting in this moment of me that really is not a full me. That's just a part of me that's showing up right now. And then to allow myself the presence of knowing that that discomfort was there, that the Vedana, that discomfort, that feeling tone was there. And I felt like I was able to work through those difficulties with my husband with more of a presence and less of a regretful tone that I may have taken in many years, and past. And I thought it was valuable, and it was a real interesting journey through, especially that non-self for a hot moment. Which has been kind of a journey to discover more, like I could get into a lot of the lists. We love all the lists and stuff. And then, you get into like the non-self, and I'm like, what does that mean? And then to understand, oh, this self is so impermanent. The self is so flavored by other things in the universe other than what is truly in me. So, or in anybody for that matter. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. It's a big topic, and I'm glad you brought up not self, because I was thinking, boy, I think the hindrances are there to protect the self. I think they come up in the process of protecting the self. I thought of that, but I thought I cannot go into that. That's too big a subject. But I think it is too. So I liked hearing about your exploration with that. Elizabeth, where are you?
There I
Oh,
am.
there you are.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, thank you both. And I want to say something briefly to both. So because this phrase was so great, I want to say it first, Liz. I just loved your description of my this was my hot moment of non-self. And I'm like, wow, talk about sitting with your hindrance. You had the feeling tone of hot at the same time as you were not personalized. And I am just in awe of that. And the fact that you could do that in a difficulty with your husband is just, that's like practicing on the spot. And it was so beautiful. And it was such a good description of what it feels like. This feels so hot, and yet I'm also not in myself. So in a way, it's cool and it's spacious. And I just loved it. And Lauren, I want to tell you particularly the things that I love most about your talk today. And I have to admit, I've just come from 4 hours of processing with my stepson yesterday, had a wonderful breakthrough conversation, had 3 hours of processing with my husband, trying to relate when he's in engineering mode and I'm in feeling mode. And boy, that takes effort. And so the lists and I was trying to keep track of them, and I just got a little overwhelmed. So then I started paying attention to your story, and I started paying attention to just a few things, and then it got easier for me. And what I loved most was when you said, I wonder if I'm the only Buddhist in the room and I'm not being a Buddhist right now. And I'm like, oh, thank you for saying that, because to me, that's exactly what it's like to be a Buddhist for me is I'm a Buddhist. I should have a way of coping with this that's different than better than I am. But here I am in all these feelings, and then I've got to start practicing, and here's the tools. And then I look around and I go, shouldn't I? And is anybody aware? Did I announce myself as a Buddhist? If I'm a Catholic, then maybe I can just get away with judging. It's like, but I'm a Buddhist and I'm not supposed to do that. So I loved that moment, and then I loved your fidelity to following your process and the way you kept with it. And I got so much out of hearing that, because I have had those times when I've been through those exact same personalization, right or wrong thinking, comparing myself, all those things. So to hear that a Dharma leader like you was going through them too was so immediate and helpful for me. And I just, and as I did pay attention, the things that I got from hearing the lists again is it helps me to understand, because coming to this Sangha is cross-cultural for me, because I spent 20 years studying with Pema Chodron, which is more of a Mahayana principle. And they think of the three kleshas of the aversion, the craving, and the ignorance. And I've heard them grouped that way without the doubt or the torpor put together. And I didn't think of them in hindrances in quite the same way. And the advice there is, we don't want to lose them, because then we lose our neurosis, our wealth as well as our neurosis. So I'm used to kind of looking for what's their hidden wealth, even as I have the aversion to feeling the neurosis. And so, and your last insight is something that I hope you develop a whole talk on this, about how the hindrances are there to protect us. I would love to hear more of your insights on that, because that speaks to something so true to me, and I haven't developed the thought around it yet. I can just feel when I feel defensive, and I can feel those hindrances come up. And so, the fact that you were able to put that into words for me was so helpful. So I don't mean to give you more work here, because you've just done an amazing, amazing talk. But I just want to say that when you said those words, something in me resonated very strongly of, oh, that feels like that pierced a veil for me. So thank you. But please, no, I don't mean to give you more work. I just want to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being like me and showing that openly. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for bringing up a lot of topics that are very interesting and heartfelt, I can tell. Thank you. Sherry, go ahead and unmute.
Yeah, thank you, Lauren. I am really seeing some overlap between something that you might have in your positive category, investigation, and a hindrance, which is doubt. And I find myself in my journey through life in general, but also in particular with the Dhamma, and practice, just kind of, I don't know, there's some movement that's quite easy for me between investigation and doubt. And it brings up for me that it would be interesting to read more about doubt in the Buddhist context. What I find in myself, and this is, I think this is what's interesting about this is, it's new for me to notice this today because of your talk. I think that's why I'm bringing it up here, that this quality of doubt maybe is sometimes shrouded as my being curious and investigative, but instead is a layer of coolness or not bringing heart into something. And I'm curious about that for myself. So thank you.
Curious. I think that's wholesome to be curious, but yeah, that's interesting. But I was listening to you, I personally see that these things can be used in different ways. So I think maybe going back to intention it seems like, but you know, the Four Foundations, intention is really important. So that might be the difference, because I do have faith that investigation in the seven factors of awakening is a wholesome, forward leading, going towards truth, activity. But you can investigate in different ways. So that's just what came up for me when you said that. Thank you. Suze.
I think I was adding a sixth hindrance, which is, and I've been working with this for not just this month, but for a while, and it's wrong view. Like, wrong view is such a hindrance to me. I've been practicing a lot with this, like, little mini mantra of this moment is totally okay just as it is. And then going bigger than this moment. This situation is just okay, just as it is. This relationship is just okay as it is. This view of life just unfolds and I'm not in charge of it. And I so often have the wrong view that I'm creating all of the everything that's come up and I know it's not a hindrance, but it's funny how it takes me back to the very first fold of the Eightfold Path of confused view, beliefs in things that really aren't true, that it feels like it permeates everything. And maybe that's why it was the first fold. But it's come back. Here we are in the seventh fold, and I've found myself going back to the first one and how in kind of investigating those views and beliefs that I have about life and me in that life and expectations of how it should be and relating to how it is and that tension. So that's how my mindfulness has been showing up lately.
Yeah, it sounds pretty worthy investigation to me.
Yeah.
No matter what
It
you name
has felt
it.
skillful,
Yeah.
difficult. But
Yes,
skillful.
definitely.
I shared, and let me one more comment. I shared this process in a Tuesday morning sit with Tim because sometimes when this little mini mantra is being repeated, there's all this stuff from the mind that contradicts it. This isn't okay because of this, 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 and this. And Tim's advice to me was, seeing all that other stuff as a storm, and then being okay with the storm, which was, whew, it's such a perfect Tim response.
Yeah.
It's so heartfelt and wise, and I don't always have an easy time to, well, I don't have an easy time being okay with the storm, but. Anyway, that was that other little piece of what happens
Yeah.
with that.
Yeah, I think we should be free to find to name whatever hinders us. You know, we know. And it doesn't have to be exactly the hindrance that the Buddha's out. And there may be a relationship. Like, does it have to do with self, not self? You know, there's probably a convergence and a relationship somewhere. Anyway, I'm sure that it sounds like you're really on to something that's really meaningful for you, and you're trying to find the truth of it. And the truth ends up, you know, in the same, you're going in the right direction, right? Yeah. Thank you, Suze. Candace?
Thank you for that talk, Lauren. And it's funny, what you and Suze were just talking about kind of plays into what I've had my hand up about. And it started with your response to Sherry about doubt and saying, you know, it's good to always go back to intention. And I've been working with this short Dharmet that Gil Fronsdale gave recently about being your own teacher and learning what is valuable for you and what isn't at this moment valuable for you. And it really is about intention and looking at, is this doubt or is this just something that isn't helping what's going on here right now? And so I've really been exploring what's helpful to me, what isn't helpful to me. And I had this amazing dream right before I woke up this morning. I was in a situation, kind of a typical dream of mine, where I was in this very busy time, and then things broke out into chaos. All these people were piling into this room wanting a party, and all I wanted was peace and quiet. And in the dream, I walked into some quiet space, and there was a person there saying, "I understand this sutta now." And I thought, where did that come from? So I asked him what the sutta was, and it wasn't really a sutta. It was a little bit of something I'd been reading to my husband last night about the Dalai Lama and something about a koan. But I said, "Oh, that's wonderful." And then I walked out of this room, and my teacher, this woman who was my teacher, was there, and I told her what was going on, and she said, "You don't need all that. I'll go and tell them to leave, and you just be peaceful." And I woke up feeling so calm and so peaceful, and I felt like I taught myself the Dharma in my dream. It was just this amazing experience. And I thought, I'm going to read more Dharma right before bed. Try to capture that again.
Thank you for sharing that. You know what that reminded me of? The Buddha picking up the leaves in the forest, you know, and he said, you know, there's many, many leaves, but you know, I'm just giving you these. That's what it reminded me of. Thank you very much. Katie, can you unmute?
Yes.
Great.
I just wanted to express a heartfelt thanks for welcoming me to this group and the teaching, Lauren, that you offered, and the teaching that others offered in their sharing of the experience. And I think the willingness to be vulnerable was really helpful for me to recognize that I'm in a state of change in my life, like turmoil, and that I had some I've been thinking about joining for like 3 weeks, and I kept having reasons that I couldn't join, and I realized I had an aversion to the discomfort of not knowing everybody and feeling, and I thought, well, heavens, how could I have, like, I didn't really know that that was what was happening until I listened to all of you talk, and I thought that I'm having an aversion to joining Sangha, which is like it just didn't occur. So the awareness arose, and it and I just felt really overwhelmed with gratitude, that because I think in this process of transition, that turning towards the Dharma and community in particular is so important. So thank you.
Thank you for even in vulnerability coming, Katie, and welcome to you. And I share your appreciation of all the people who are here today, listening, hearing, and sharing. It's really a gratitude. I feel a lot of gratitude. So with that, it's we're coming to a close. And offer the merit of our practice. Today, may the wisdom, understanding, compassion, which is found and our intentions along those lines, may they benefit us and benefit all those near and far, all sentient beings. May all beings be safe and may they know peace. And gratitude for what is. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful week. So nice seeing you here, and hope we see you again.